Hey everyone, Chat Cemetery is back. I'm your host, Deanna Chapman, and today I am once again joined by Dennis Freeman. We are talking all about the short story collection, Just After Sunset, which contains 13 stories. Dennis, how are you doing today?
I'm good. How are you?
Doing well. Trying to plow through a lot of this reading here, and I've been pretty hit or miss with his short story collections, and I know we've talked about a few together now, and is it just me, or did this one, even more so than a lot of the others, just feel like there were a bunch of stories where you read them and you're just kind of like, okay, that was a thing I read?
Yeah, you know, and you know me, like when it comes to short stories, like writing them or reading them, this is the genre that I love. But yeah, you're right. This particular collection, there were two stories out of it maybe that I even cared about. The rest were just so-so and, you know, you read them because they're Stephen King, but that's about all the value they have to me.
Yeah, there were only a few that I think really stood out to me. And obviously, a couple of these have adaptations. So I guess we can kind of talk about those ones real quick. But you have N, which was adapted into a comic book by Marvel. And I guess there's also some sort of animated short version of it. I think it was like 12 minute long videos or something along those lines. I haven't seen that just yet, but I did read the comic recently. I actually read the comic before reading the story. And I think N is one that stands out just because it kind of has these parallels to the Dark Tower, and King loves to get in some Dark Tower references and parallels whenever he can. But is N one that stood out for you, or was that another one where you were like, I've read this once, I don't need to read it again?
No, N was my second favorite out of this entire collection. And I actually had, I avoided reading it. Everyone was telling me, hey, you got to check this out, you got to check this out, back in the day. And I don't know, at the time, it just didn't sound that interesting because, you know, the Kindle had just come out and I wasn't really interested in anything about it. But that particular story, just the way it did timelines and everything, I mean, the whole thing was pretty awesome.
Yeah, I also just love how the story is told because it's kind of a story within a story.
Yeah, the whole story within a story aspect was really cool. For me, I just kind of like the idea that the guy was able to go into, like you said, with these Dark Tower references, that was pretty amazing. It kind of reminded you of, I don't know exactly where you are in the series right now because of your reading schedule, but
I've read everything except for The Wind Through the Keyhole. So I got through the big back-to-back-to-back chunk of 5, 6, and 7. So I have pretty much the full story, and I know The Wind Through the Keyhole is kind of like a 4.5. It kind of falls between the 4th and 5th books. But yeah, I think what made N so interesting was not only how it was a story within a story kind of thing, but just the way they handled the supernatural elements to it. Because obviously when you see 7 rocks, there are 7 rocks there, but then you take a picture and then there's 8, and it kind of drives everyone crazy who notices it. And I just liked how that was shown through the writing.
Oh yeah, 100%.
And one of the other stories that received an adaptation is The Cat from Hell. It was adapted in the anthology film Tales from the Dark Side, the movie, in 1990. So obviously this is one of his stories that was written well before this collection came out. And it was almost like one of those where I was reading the notes at the end of the book and he was like, I forgot this didn't come out in a collection, and someone had to make sure that they weren't, you know, double publishing this story in 2 different collections, which I just thought was funny because he's written so many things over the years, obviously. And when he had his drug addiction, I know he barely remembers writing some stuff. So just the fact that he was like, oh yeah, this thing. And it had been adapted, and it was kind of, you know, one of his stories that were a bigger deal, I guess you could say.
Yeah, and I know it was published in 1977, so as for when it was written, God only knows, but that story, it's one of those so bad, it's good, kind of like watching Tales from the Crypt.
I have not seen that, but I have plans to watch it soon, because it's one of those things where I'm like, okay, you know what, I know what the gist of this show is going to be, and I just want to see how it plays out. But yeah, it's not necessarily one of his better stories, but it's so laughably bad in a way, with just the premise of a hitman coming to kill someone's cat, that you can't help but kind of enjoy yourself.
Yeah, it's it kind of reminded me of the crawling hand from one of the, actually I think it was the last one we talked about together. It's absurd, but the ending was just, that did it for me. Like, just the cat actually getting inside the dude and killing him. Like, it's literally something that you would have, either Tales from the Crypt, or if you're a little bit older than I am, you could look at the old pulp comics, the old horror comics. It's ridiculous.
Right. And, you know, the entire time I was reading it, because obviously I had watched Tales from the Dark Side much earlier on in this podcast, I was kind of just replaying that segment from Tales from the Dark Side in my head the entire time I was reading it. And I think, you know, that's a pretty good adaptation of what the story gives you.
You know, I haven't actually got to see the adaptation. It was like, I know you kind of have a to-do list. That was one of those things that I never actually got to see. It's kind of like when you mentioned with N had the comic book. I didn't realize that it had a comic, and I definitely didn't know about the short videos.
Yeah, I'll have to seek out the short videos and see if I can find those. But I think those two are kind of like the quote-unquote bigger stories. And I don't know if you're aware of this adaptation either, but Willa, the first story in the collection, was adapted into a short film in 2019. I vaguely remember seeing like an Instagram account for this movie or something, and I don't know what happened with the short film, if it was just released straight to VOD or if it like played at film festivals or something like that, but I'll be interested to see if I can find this somewhere and watch it, because when I started reading this, you know, Willa wasn't really a story that immediately grabbed my attention the same way that something like, you know, Autopsy Room 4 did at the beginning of the last collection I read, I believe.
Yeah, it was, I don't know, it was kind of like, you know, they have a hell of a band for me. Like, it was a good story. It wasn't necessarily my favorite. I mean, they've been dead since the beginning of the movie. It's kind of been done to death at this point. In 2006, I actually read this originally when it was published. It was a good story, but it's nothing that, you know, most people that read horror haven't seen before.
Yeah. One of the stories that did stand out to me, though, was The Gingerbread Girl. I just thought how he wrote about the trauma that was happening in this one was really intense. It really felt like a good thriller movie that you were reading, though.
Definitely. Emily, the way she deals with her pain, with the running, just the anguish in that woman really came through in the pages.
Well, the crazy thing, too, is that there's a major traumatic event that happens, you know, before we even really get to where the story starts, and that is the death of a child, you know, and it kind of pulls this marriage apart. And then you have this other traumatic event that happens to her, and you almost forget that there was a death before all of this happened. And King has a knack for writing these super tragic characters to the point where there's so much tragedy that you forget about some of it. And even though this story was one of the longer ones, I think it was around 80 pages long, it kind of justified that length because of how in-depth he went with that trauma.
Yeah, and I'm not exactly sure of the word count on that one, but it was definitely on the longer end of a short. And just everything he did with it, the, like you were saying, the lead up into, before we even get to the real, I don't want to say real story because it's all part of the story, but until you get to, you have this tragedy, you have this marriage, you have her dealing with the trauma, and then you have this whole other traumatic event that she just handles in stride. And Emily was an amazing female protagonist. I'm actually shocked that we don't see this character in other work, so.
Yeah, and I realize I did not run through the table of contents at the top of the episode. So just quickly here, there was an introduction. Willa was the first story. This story, The Gingerbread Girl, came after. Then Harvey's Dream, Rest Stop, Stationary Bike, The Things They Left Behind, Graduation Afternoon, N, The Cat from Hell, The New York Times at Special Bargain Rates, Mute, Ayana, A Very Tight Place, and then it closes out with his notes on each of the stories in a chapter called Sunset Notes.
I totally forgot about that.
But yeah, I agree that The Gingerbread Girl was approaching novella length, I feel like, because I was kind of getting lost in it when I was reading. I was like, you know, this seems like a pretty long, in-depth story, and we both know that King is known for going long on things sometimes, but this didn't feel like it was too long. I think it was the right length for this kind of story, and, you know, he has a bunch in here that were roughly 20-ish pages, which I think is a decent length for a short story.
Oh, yeah, definitely. This one, it could have definitely gotten its own publishing. It wouldn't have taken much. And it seemed like you could tell how much he actually enjoyed writing it too.
Yeah, this one and N were two of the longer stories in this collection, and both, in my opinion, justified that. There were a lot, though, of the 13 that just, I read them and then I was like, I know I read this, but it didn't really make me feel anything necessarily. And I think, you know, I kind of felt that way about Stationary Bike. Graduation Afternoon was so short, I was like, okay, that was over.
Oh, no, Stationary Bike, that was my first. That's so funny. It was, I kind of liked the idea. The guy just kind of ended up in his own little world. And I don't know, that one for me did it more than, like, say, what is it, New York Times at Special Bargain Rates. Don't get me, I mean, both are pretty cool, but it's just the idea of Richard's from Stationary Bike. Richard's like, he just wants to get his cholesterol in check. And what was in my mind, at what I thought at first was a hallucination, turned out to be his body actually being pissed off. Like people were losing jobs. Because who hasn't, as a kid, kind of had that moment where you're like, it's kind of like you just kind of imagine that everything in your body is being ran, like, in, like, what is it called? Inside out? I don't know. It just gave me childhood memories, I think is why it was so standout.
Yeah, I don't know if maybe some of these I was just distracted while I was reading them. And I sometimes, you know, with as fast as I'm reading through these, I'll read a whole section, but I'm only like half paying attention. And then something catches my eye that I'm reading and I'm like, wait, how did we get here?
Right. And it's kind of like, what was the Ayana? I can't even remember what Ayana was about. And I for this episode, I reread this and I still cannot tell you what's going on in that story. It was one that just didn't stick.
All I remember about that one was that there was this young girl who had some sort of like special ability and it kind of follows her story. But yeah, that's all I got. And I don't even know if that's correct.
I mean, if it's a Stephen King book, little girl has magic powers. She was, I mean, that seems about right. And at some point she was probably kidnapped and she killed her entire class. With King, it's when there's a little girl with special powers, something is on fire.
Yeah, that seems about right. Are there any others in particular that grabbed your attention? I do want to talk about A Very Tight Place, but I think we can keep that for last since it is appropriately the final story.
Nothing in particular really stood out. I don't know why Gingerbread Girl wasn't higher on my list. After we talked about it, the more I think about it, that was probably the best written story in this collection. But between Stationary Bike and those two were the ones that really stood out for me. So yeah, we're good to go on to A Very Tight Place.
That one, I think, just stood out to me because I'm always kind of paying attention to how things start and end, even with King collections, because every time I read a King collection, there's always something I enjoy from it. You know, you have different seasons, which is four novellas, but it ends on the breathing method, which I know is most people's least favorite story of those four. And it's always interesting to me what is chosen to kick off a collection and then close it out. And with A Very Tight Place, I thought this was a very emotional and brutal story. There's a lot going on that just makes you uncomfortable. And, you know, you have this moment where I believe his name is Curtis, and he's basically like sitting in poop and covered in it, all at the hands of this guy who is just the biggest jerk in the world. And he's one of those characters that King writes so well that you know you're just going to hate him with every ounce of your being.
Well, yeah. I mean, Tim killed the man's he didn't kill the man's dog. The electric fence killed the dog, but he knew what was going to happen. And then he locks Curtis in a porta potty of all things, and tips it over. That's, I mean, the story, and I think I was reading it right, like it was like a hot summer day in Florida. So there's no way around it. It was nasty. And just thinking about it kind of makes me gag.
Yeah. And not only does he do that, but he's like a homophobic character as well. And he is just the worst of the worst. And what's kind of scary is that people like this still exist in 2021.
Oh, yeah. No redeemable qualities in that character at all.
I really do love, though, when Curtis escapes and he jumps in the hot tub with him.
Yeah, and then like holds his head under.
You just want to cheer so much for Curtis in that moment.
Well, and I just, what gets me, it was funny because it's like, at that point, what do you do? I think it was even Curtis that told him, it's like, you know, if you ever tell anyone, you know, that I came over here and did this, I'm just going to tell him you tried to kill me, which, the more I think about it, locking him in a hot box, basically, and leaving him there overnight covered in, you know, feces is probably about as close to, I mean, you could probably make that case that he was trying to kill him.
Yeah, it also goes to show that you could have two completely different people living right next to each other. And, you know, in a place like Florida where it's hot and it's gross, you can only imagine that the heat sort of makes these tempers even worse than we're kind of reading about in the story.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Having never been to Florida myself, just, I mean, everyone knows that I'm in Arkansas personally. So the heat, when it's hot, people just tend to be pissed off, and it just, it is what it is.
I can't imagine that southern humid heat making anything any better ever.
No, not ever. And being, I mean, just being in Florida in general would probably upset me. So it's not, from what I understand, it's a crazy place to visit. Oh, almost forgot though. Like, didn't Tim kill himself at the end of that story? Or at least it was implied.
Yeah, I was just going to bring this up because I think this is one of those really powerful endings. They don't actually answer whether or not Tim has killed himself, but Curtis and his maid hear a gunshot. And, you know, Curtis kind of makes this snarky remark about, oh, maybe we should go see. But then he just keeps on working. And then he tells his maid that he's thinking of getting a new dog. And obviously, this kind of puts things into a little more context because I'm not super familiar with Florida. I've never been there either. But there are obviously very rich areas of Florida. And the fact that we find out that Curtis has a maid, you're like, okay, these two guys are very well off. And Tim was the kind of person who just never really knew how to act like a real adult and handle things without just trying to overpower people either physically or just status-wise. So I felt like, you know, that final moment where he's with his maid and he's like, I think I'm going to get a new dog. It was just so good. And, you know, even though this story is terrifying, I think that wrapped it up really, really well.
Oh yeah. Out of all the endings in this book, that was probably the one I was most happy with. And I guess that's horrible to say because the man committed suicide, but he's not real and I don't care. But it was definitely something. Somebody finally got theirs in a short story, because in these short stories that King tends to write, the bad guy doesn't always lose.
And it's funny because a lot of times I don't necessarily enjoy when a King story has a happy ending. And it's hard to call this a happy ending when someone commits suicide, no matter how horrible they are.
True.
But it was triumphant for Curtis.
Definitely. And I mean, granted, the guy who killed himself, I think it's just a blatant homophobia and everything. I don't know. Do I have sympathy for the guy? No, but yeah, you are definitely right. Anything that ends in a suicide, it probably shouldn't be celebrated, but it was one of those comeuppance moments, I think.
Yeah, and we know that based on what had unfolded throughout the entire story that Tim was never a good person, at least from the time that we meet the character until the end.
Oh, no. No, there was, yeah, no redeeming qualities like that. Like the guy from I wish I could remember names. The guy from Dead Zone that basically kicked the dog to death for no reason other than it jumped up at him.
Stilson?
Yeah, Stilson. Thank you.
Another character that's just so easy to hate.
Yeah, King is really good. Like, King has a thing for bullies and just generally shitty human beings that he writes them so well that it kind of makes you wonder.
Yeah, and some of these stories do draw from personal experience. I believe it's Rest Stop that was kind of inspired by him going to a rest stop, stopping, hearing an argument between a man and a woman in the women's restroom, and different outcomes. You know, they seem to leave a little more peacefully than the story does. But it's funny how he can take something that isn't necessarily ordinary, but it's kind of just like something that happens in your everyday life. And he kind of puts this twist on it. And it makes me wonder every time I read one of his stories. I'm like, okay, what happened to him?
Yeah. For me, that one kind of fell off. It wasn't like, I didn't blank on it as much as I did Ayana, but it was, I don't know. For me, that story just didn't really do it for me. It was, I mean, don't get me wrong. It was cool. Everyone has that alter ego inside him. It kind of reminded me of his characters in The Dark Half.
And in the notes, he did mention, you know, this was my Richard Bachman taking over, kind of.
Mm-hmm. It felt that way, for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, A Very Tight Place was definitely a good story to end it on, just because that ending is so well written. And then obviously you have the Sunset Notes, which, yes, are part of the book, but I don't count them as like the final thing in the book. I just mean, you know, story to story, you know, I'm not counting the introduction and the end notes as the start and finish of the book, even though they technically are.
And honestly, I know we don't usually go over them and I'm not prepared to right now. To me, the intro and the outro notes and anything he writes kind of like little blurbs before the stories when he does that, those to me are, I know it's going to sound stupid, but that's part of the reason why I like reading his anthologies. It's kind of like he gives you kind of his mindset that he was in when he wrote it, if he even remembers it. Like it could just be a crucial moment, but the man did a lot of cocaine, so it is what it is.
I feel like these introductions and the end notes are giving you a little glimpse of what he does more in his nonfiction books, like On Writing and Dance Macabre, which I haven't read Dance Macabre yet, but I'm looking forward to it because I do like that glimpse inside of someone's process, whether it's a writer, you know, someone making YouTube videos, podcasts. I'm kind of into processes in general, and I agree with you that they add a little more to the collection. And if I hadn't read the end notes, I wouldn't know some of these, you know, probably quote unquote trivia facts that I do.
Definitely. It's the man is his own Wikipedia page when it comes to writing about what he does. And like anything he does, you know, everyone kind of joked that if he wrote a grocery list, people would buy it. And I think things like Dance Macabre, Memoirs of the Craft, and these intro and outro notes all go to show. I mean, it's just he's just an amazing person to learn about. And I honestly believe that kids will be reading about Stephen King 50 years from now in literary classes.
Yeah, I think so too. One other thing I want to talk about in regards to the collections, do you feel like they work better when they have some sort of theme? Because this one seemed pretty hit or miss for both of us, but I think the stories that I liked, I really, really liked. So I ended up giving this, I want to say, a 3 out of 5 on Goodreads, which seems to be where I fall with almost every single short story collection.
Yeah, in this particular case, Just After Sunset, like I was saying, just it wasn't for me. Like Bizarre Bad Dreams in general was probably just way above this. And I think there was too many stories from too many different places, from too many times in King's life. And I think that's what kind of killed it for me, was just it wasn't the same Stephen King writing all of the stories.
Yeah, I would really prefer if some of these collections had more of a theme to them, because that feels to be
definitely
what works best. It's not just sort of this hodgepodge of stories. You know, Different Seasons, again, I think is by far my favorite collection, even though, like I said earlier, I don't care for the breathing method as much. But because it's, you know, each season, it makes sense as a theme, and those stories are so, so character-driven that even if you only like 3 of the 4, those 3 are some of his strongest stories.
Oh, yeah. And I think when they're thematic and they all go together, or if they all go together, I think you tend to take a lot more from it. Yeah, I can't disagree with that at all. And like, the randomness of this, I didn't like it. I think we actually, the one other book we did, it wasn't the last one, it may have been the time before, but it was just like, dude, what are you doing? Just pick a topic.
Yeah, because there are definitely ones that feel like the stories could have been better paired. Like, there have been a number of stories that tie into the Dark Tower. So it's like, why not collect those together? Because that would make sense, at least to my brain, you know, to just kind of collect all of the Dark Tower related short stories. And then, you know, you have ones like The Mist that are more monster kind of stories. I think he has enough of those to kind of have a collection that is mostly themed to that, you know, maybe put the monster stories with, you know, like the Jerusalem's Lot short story.
Man, I love that short story. But Deanna, if we did that, then where would we put the Little League essay?
In the back of his Red Sox book?
Please, God, never do that again.
I mean, shouldn't it be paired with the baseball book? That kind of makes more sense.
Yeah, like the more I think about it now, yeah, the themes would just be, God, he's got to start doing it. I mean, I guess when you're, especially now at his age and the fact that he never stops writing, I don't think there's any chance of that happening anytime soon. But yeah, they definitely need to look into fixing those collections.
Yeah, it might be a little too late now. But, you know, I've noticed that when it's just a collection of novellas, it tends to be 4 stories and it's not as drastic as it is when you have 10 plus stories. So, you know, I read If It Bleeds out of order because it was new and I wanted to read it, and I got a review copy, admittedly. So I jumped ahead and I've read a couple things beyond this book. And I really do think that my brain just prefers themes. And I'm curious to see what some of the upcoming collections are like, just because maybe they might be a little more themed, but I also could be completely wrong. So we'll see. But Dennis, do you have any other thoughts on Just After Sunset?
No, not on Just After Sunset. No, I just finished If It Bleeds myself. So I'm looking for something new to get into.
Well, Stephen King has another book coming out soon.
Yeah, you can almost say that at any time, any point in history.
To be fair, this one will be out in March. So that is quite soon. It's another hard case crime novel from Stephen King called Later, if anyone wants to check that out and if you haven't somehow heard about it by now. But Dennis, thank you so much for joining me to talk about Just After Sunset. I know we kept it a little short here. We tend to talk about the ones that have received adaptations at least. And, you know, if I find the Willa short, maybe, you know, I'll have to do an episode on that at some point. But I do think that, you know, and maybe I'm going to shoot myself in the foot by saying this on a podcast here, but I'm thinking that once I'm caught up on all of the books, maybe I'll go back and revisit the collections and kind of do mini episodes on specific stories just to go a little more in depth. Because I feel like when I read these in one go, I never remember every single story.
I completely understand. And it could be because, you know, you have to read so much, but that's, I mean, even now, even with me taking my time, there's still sometimes it's just hard to retain, especially when there's no theme, like you were saying.
Yeah. I've also noticed that if I take too long on a book, I forget some of it by the time I finish it. So it's sort of this necessary evil of reading a collection, I guess.
Definitely. I'm with you 100% on that.
Yeah. Well, Dennis, thank you again. I know we have at least one more episode that we're going to do, but I believe it's a Patreon exclusive episode. So for anyone listening, you can check out this podcast and my other podcast, Welcome to Geekdom, on Patreon. There's going to be a lot more bonus content this year.
All right. Thanks for having me. I really appreciate it.
All right, that does it for this episode of Chat Cemetery. You can support the podcast on Patreon for $1 a month. You'll get a thank you on the show. For $2 a month, I will send you a Chat Cemetery sticker. And if you want to follow us on social media, you can do so at Chat Cemetery on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. You could also rate and review the show. That's a huge help. And as always, thank you for listening, and we hope you enjoy the rest of your day.